Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to Down in Front. Our movie this week is fucking Priest.
Wait, I'm confused.
Pop in your...
Or in other words, our movie this week is Serenity, Judge Dredd,
Constantine,
Pirates of the Caribbean,
Legion,
Matrix Reloaded.
It's the surrogates of supernatural thrillers. Pop in your DVD or Blu-ray, press play, press pause when the Screen Gems logo clicks off. When the movie becomes Close Encounters for a second, press pause, and in a second I'll say 3, 2, 1 on pause, at which point I'll press play, you'll press play, and we'll watch the movie together in perfect sync. It'll be like any other commentary, except of course with four friends in your head. Those friends this week are myself, as always, Teague Christie, my friend Brian William Finifter.
Greetings.
Michael Dorkman Scott.
Hello.
And Trey, I want to watch Priest Stokes.
Hi!
You did this to us.
Trey, meet
you're
bus.
The, you're the reason, Trey. You're why we're here.
Hey, I said if you want to. It's not like I put guns to your head. Yeah, no.
Now all of a sudden we're getting qualified.
How many times did I say, look, if you want to do it, I just think it's worth doing.
Anyway.
Love it or hate it, I think it's worth
doing. So if you didn't watch Priest because you're a person, what it is a movie wherein Paul Bettany, and this unrelated to the joke about the story itself, another movie where Paul Bettany plays a man of God who's like angry and vengeful and on a mission about something. A good guy or a bad guy, that's happened a lot. But
from the same director.
From the same director as Legion, was it Legion?
Yeah.
Yeah, okay, cool. Which we talked about, and we fixed the shit out of it. That's a great episode if you want to listen to it. But the problem is, everything about Priest is something about everything else, if that makes sense. We made the comment on Surrogates that you don't have to see any other movies if you see this one, because all the other ones are in it. That's this. Oh my God. As a movie itself, I actually didn't like it that much. I wasn't able to, at the outset, I didn't have enough of an investment in the characters. I wasn't introduced to them in a way that made me go, I care about these people. I want to see what their thing is. I also, there's a kind of a lack of stakes, because if he loses, the shitty city is bad.
That is an issue. It's like, oh my God, they're going to come to the highly industrial
they're going to fuck up the dystopia.
Millions of armed guards. It's like, whereas they've already wiped out a bunch of, you know, poor farm families, and that's who you feel bad about.
Well, there's the point, you know, presumably you've watched this, you don't give a shit.
Or you haven't watched it and you don't give a shit.
Yeah. It's like the Reavers might go to the Alliance Corps.
Right.
Well, that's good, right?
Yeah. We see Carl Urban, who has become the first human vampire or whatever, so I'm like, wait. So you get to live forever, you're super strong, and you can go out in the sun. I don't see the downside to taking your deal and yeah, and joining with you, actually,
yeah,
compared to what else is going on. So it's like
back home I have to feed the boiler.
Yeah, we talk about how it's important for the villain to have a point, but it's like it's also important for the villain's point to not be the best point.
Yeah,
it's also important for the hero to have a point.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, this movie, this is going to be a very fun episode, but I don't like this movie very much. I'll try not to be derisive about it, but addition to being all surrogacy, it didn't actually work for me as a movie. Brian?
I hadn't seen it until, you know, 2 nights ago or whatever it was. I can't remember it, at least in recent memory, when I've watched a movie that where there was such a clear delineation in my attention span between when there was a very nice and pretty looking set piece action scene going on and when two characters were talking to each other about presumably something. I have no idea. Because as instantly, when it just... I guess I've just seen enough movies at this point where my brain just sees it coming.
Is such an easy movie to check out on. You're like, all right, what time is it? Yeah. This is what they're talking about.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
If you've seen,
let me go see what's on Reddit for 5 minutes.
It's time for this to be happening.
Yeah.
If you have seen other movies, you have overprepared for watching this movie.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was actually surprised when I caught myself watching this movie going, character scene, okay, what's on Reddit? Something's happening again, okay. Yeah.
If we could just figure out what film this is a fan film of, then we would know the secret of
Priest. We would also probably find an awesome film.
Like 70s, you know, Philip Kaufman Invasion of the Body Snatchers kind of movie that this was a fan film of.
Yeah.
I bet that's a great movie.
Dorkman?
I'm somewhere straddling the fence.
It's like literally a spectrum right across the couch.
It is. I'm straddling between where Brian was and where I think Trey is, because I watch it and I'm like, yeah, it's a total cliche. I mean, about halfway through, I started calling out what movie I was watching a scene from. Yeah. You know what movie?
I'll repeat what I did the other night. But I was like, this.
Yeah.
That.
Spot the reference. Yeah.
What movie? Basically, I mean, you watch it and you're like, well, the director sure liked this movie and he liked this scene from that movie. Yeah.
Did he make a movie in the period of time in which he was calling out other movies?
In the commentary, he does say some of the references.
Yeah.
He goes, this is from that.
The issue is, to me, I think this would have been a if not a great movie, this would have been a much more enjoyable movie with like one more pass at the dialogue. Because as it is,
that could even solve some of my problems.
As it is, it's a perfectly serviceable movie. It's perfectly straightforward, but it's like everything people say is a cliche, or it's exactly what they're thinking or about to do, or it's a plot point. It's like there is no personality. There are no characters in this movie, and it's like everything is trying to spoon feed the audience. Like, this is what I'm thinking. This is what's the next scene is going to be. And it's
Dork
like,
man, I love you, but we have to do a commentary.
Exactly. Exactly. That's what this entire movie is. And it's like, if you just kind of sanded the edges a little bit and made it and just pushed a little more of that into the subtext.
Move a comma or something. Start
there
fresh.
There are some great moments. Brad Dourif, his little salesman character, I'm like, write the whole movie
there's
like him.
There's the movie.
Yeah,
the
I was going to
write the movie
say
like
that
him.
And then he gets sort of dismissed and tossed away, and it feels like there's a coda to his character that we didn't get.
Yeah, exactly.
Something else should have happened.
But he's the one who's like, that is a person. That's a character. More of those. Yeah. And everyone else is just fulfilling their plug-in roles in the
including
the
Paul Bettany.
Yeah.
By the way, never, ever, every director listening to this, if you're going to hire Paul Bettany, don't make him do the Batman voice. He doesn't pull it off very well, and it's weird.
But I think Paul Bettany, just like we said in Legion, I was like, Paul Bettany, if anyone was going to make this movie work, Paul Bettany is just
the answer is no one was going to make it work.
But he gives a great performance, and you know, Carl Urban is
It's what
they're working with. Yeah,
Carl Urban is the perfect name for Carl Urban, because when he says his name, you know he's saying Carl Urban.
Yeah, it's like it's.
He has a bunch of consonants in there.
As I was saying beforehand, I was like, "Get out of there, Carl Urban!
You're not a vampire. You are Carl Urban."
Yeah.
Trey, how did you come to this movie?
Well, I came to it literally in the checkout line at Ralph's, where I was, there's a stack of DVDs there. It's like, whatever Big Mama's House or whatever Tyler whatever Perry movie is out.
You finish, and then I'll say what just happened.
Did you do a spit take?
No, I was. I've been drinking wine, and I just finished my glass of wine, and I sat back to let you talk, and Teak hands me the bottle, like, keep going. Like, we got a whole movie to get through. Keep it up.
You're
going to
need this. Drink your medicine.
He needs his Dorkman juice.
I quite literally was in the checkout line at Ralph's,
and there was
10,000 stacks of movies, like, oh, look, they have 57 copies of Paul Blart Mall Cop. Which I don't think even for $5 I'm going to pick up. But then there was Priest sitting there, and I remember the trailer for Priest being, wow, that looks like really from an art direction point of view. It's very stylish.
It looks kind of pitch black.
It's an art directed to hell and back movie. And I thought, well, $4.99, yeah, fuck it, fine, why not, And I picked it up, and I took it home, and I popped it in, and had no expectations really whatsoever. And it was like, huh, this is all the movies. I really saved a bunch of
money. I got a real deal there.
I saved a bunch of money there. As the joke goes, like, I bought the dictionary because all the other books were in it, so I'm done. But at the same time, I've kind of found myself kind of like, even though I know that this is literally like, they got like the paint by numbers. Okay, so you put a little violence here, you put some blood here, you put some chop sake over here, movie. Ta-da. It's as formulaic as you can get. And yet I was like, well, but they did it. They did the hell out of it. And when it's supposed to be all stylish and kung fu-y, they did that. And it probably gets bonus points just for me personally, because probably my favorite subgenre in all of movies is the faded, collapsed future genre. I just, for whatever reason, I find that the most fascinating. That's why I love Road Warrior. I love Firefly. That sort of weird smash up, and why I should have left Terra Nova, but we're not going to talk about that bitch today. That weird conflagration of some functioning technology against, ancient, old school
society.
Yeah, trying to scrabble out a living. I really love that genre, and I thought they did a beautiful job with it. And it really is part of, like, even here where I get to go, that's a cool motorcycle. And I can't wait to watch the special feature about
how
they made that motorcycle.
Like I said, if they were more interesting when they were, puppeteering their faces and talking.
Their faces were moving. And
yeah, exactly.
Words
and sound
were coming
was coming out.
When the meat puppets were moving.
Exactly. Yeah. If that were more interesting, I'd be like, I don't think this is going to go up on the classic shelf, but it would go up on the perfectly fine movie shelf.
For me, the closest analog for this movie, and also that movie is in this movie, that just happened to see recently, you know, because everyone, it was a movie that everyone would mention a lot, and I was like, all right, I'll check it out, you know, I saw it at the video store, and I grabbed it, and I watched it, and it was like, and I had kind of the same reaction, except I was just less entertained by that than this. This movie, to me, the closest analog to this movie is Equilibrium. Equilibrium is the same thing. There are no humans in Equilibrium. Yeah. They are literally just kabuki players acting out archetypes at each other in this very stylized kind
and
of
smashing puppets
none
together.
Of this is real. No humans would ever act or talk like this. How did this society ever come into existence at all?
Yeah.
It's just like, and once upon a time, just go with me on this.
Yeah.
And Equilibrium makes no goddamn sense and doesn't actually pay off the world it sets up, and neither does Priest. But it really felt like Equilibrium, except Equilibrium was like, you know, the not too distant future where everyone's driving a Lexus with the Lexus logo taken off, whereas this is like cool motorcycles and westerns, and I like that genre better. I'm not saying that everyone's going to love this movie, but I think we should do it on Down in Front.
Yeah, sure.
I'm looking forward to this episode. Yeah. In the chat room, our good friend Lalide will be troping, and she starts off by pointing out
good
that
luck.
They call yeah, exactly. Just try to fucking, her finger's going to catch fire.
Yeah.
You know that little animated gif of the guy bashing his head on the keyboard until his head turns into a pulp? But she points out right off the bat that crapsack world is how they refer to
yes.
that kind of thing. Anyway.
I bet if you read off the list of those movies, I would go, love it, love it, love it, yeah. love it, love it.
We'll do that in a second. Pull up the list of crapsack world movies. You're at the point where the United Artists, no, Screen Gems logo just clicked off, and we are here. Put your finger on the button. 3, 2, 1... Crapsack.
Two quick connections, actually.
What's a solar mirror? I don't like it.
You were no stars. You were saying Equilibrium, and while I was watching this, I was going, this reminds me of Ultraviolet, but it's a better version of Ultraviolet. Ultraviolet took it too far in terms of the stylization and stuff like that, but it reminded me of Ultraviolet, which is by the same guy who made Equilibrium. Also, if we want to play 6 Degrees of Surrogates, this movie was shot by Don Burgess, or Burgess, however you pronounce it, who also shot Spider-Man, but he also shot Terminator 3, directed by Jonathan Mostow, who directed Surrogates.
Ah, very nicely done.
You're welcome.
And that's why the Jews brought down the Twin Towers.
Exactly.
It's plain as day, people.
Anyway, this is blue.
Yeah, it's very blue.
It's very blue, which is like, you know, we can't fault this movie for being the one to exploit that trope.
All right, yes. Now,
well, it's supposed to be.
Are these Tippet critters?
These are
they. Funny you should say. Yes, they are,
because they're awesome,
and they don't. And you notice that they fuck up.
Yeah,
and that's
the people who haven't heard the other
ones.
I
watched this whole movie, and then at the end, the credits came up, and I was like, oh, of course Tippett did those creatures. You know, they're really good.
If someone hasn't heard, we were talking about on Constantine, most of all, what is like the Phil Tippett-y animation style?
Phil's just very good at, and you can see it all the way back to Jurassic Park and Star Wars and other things. Phil's very good at, I mean, literally, it's fun to work with him, because you'll see him do it sometimes, and that's the golden moment. And I do it too, you know, now that he showed me it was okay, is Phil really tries to get into the headspace of the creature. You know, he really comes at it from a Wild Kingdom kind of point of view of, okay, this is a thing. It exists. It has a life. It has a way that it functions. What does it do? And, you know, how does it, when it's after prey, what does it do? How does it act? And on and on. And one of the little hallmarks, you'll see it in Starship Troopers, you'll see it in Jurassic Park, you'll see it in, Constantine. One of the things is that, life isn't perfect. And so a creature that, like, runs at you but bumps into something or missteps or you know, literally slips and falls over. You know, one fell down in the background.
You worked on Jurassic Park, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Right on. The raptors are all...
They're just like, you know...
oh, shit, boom!
The raptors aren't perfect. They're just, you know, they're good enough. Just like, and that's what all life is about, is just being good enough to reproduce yourself.
By the way, this little animation Tartakovsky.
Here. Yeah.
This little animation. I like the way they present the vampires to kill you. They'll just jump through you.
Yeah, yeah. Plow.
Now, here's where... This is, for me, you know, and again, now maybe once again, the minority. This is the least successful part of the movie for me. Because
it feels so different from
it's
the rest
exactly.
of the movie.
It's kind of like, okay, cartoon. And I know Gendy, is it Gendy, Gendy?
I say Gennady, but I think it's Gendy.
Gendy Tartakovsky, again, is a word that I know that the kids know. That's a phrase.
I've never heard those syllables before.
Yeah, exactly.
Neither
have I.
Exactly. He did
it's Clone Wars.
He did the initial Clone Wars, not the 3D one, but the 2D Clone Wars.
And
that's
it's weird.
For.
It's so ingrained that it's like I can look at that and go, yeah, that's that Clone Wars dude. Because clearly it's the same thing.
Samurai Jack.
Again, these are syllables that I know mean things to people, like football and Super Bowl, but. Whoopi Goldberg. but you know, I see this as like, it feels like, and literally it is, again, the director's commentary, because I couldn't wait to hear the director's commentary on this bad boy. Explain yourself.
Is the whole thing, I'm just going, yeah.
No, it's not. He is kind of a fanboy about things. This is a budgetary issue. He wanted to do this live action, and they didn't have the money to like do the backstory. Yeah.
I was watching it with Brian. I was like, hey, look, we couldn't afford this.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, exactly. It's very.
And not only that, but
whenever
it's like
you see an animation, just look at the production value involved in the animation, and
you go, that's a storyboard.
If it's high enough.
Yeah. This was the storyboard.
Yeah. But my thinking on it is, first of all, I don't think it's really necessary. It's one of those things where it's like, you know,
yeah,
you don't need to tell us this whole.
The problem with,
we get it. You know, we already know it.
The problem
we've,
with
we've
this
seen those movies.
Yeah. Is I want to see that movie.
Yeah. I kind of want to see the Vampire War.
That was the thing I had with. It's weird because I'm really not Mr. Animation at all. I don't get into it very easily. I don't do it very often. But I'll tell people, like, if you want to see like a really cool crystallized version of 1,000 great sci-fi ideas that have been used before, watch The Animatrix, watch the Second Renaissance Part 2, where it's just like, oh my god, and it's this short film about the moment that the uprising of robots with sentience came to head with the civilization of these humans,
and
then the resulting slaughter.
Movie.
We haven't seen that movie. Exactly,
no.
But it's like,
no, I mean,
we always see the aftermath.
But then
when I saw that, I was like,
post-apocalyptic robot future is a time-honored trope, but we've never seen, except for that one
short film,
one segment of the Animatrix, we've never seen that actual story.
And then the same thing was,
we might see it now because Planet of the Apes finally showed us thing that had only ever been talked about in all those other movies.
And we're potentially going to see it, depending on if he follows through, because he's always got a bunch of things in. But Spielberg has optioned a book called Robopocalypse.
Yes.
Which is...
That?
Robopocalypse, I haven't read it. I bought it at Comic-Con, but I haven't read it yet. But from what I understand, it's basically World War Z... But
with robots.
Robots instead of so it's told as a future, you know, looking back, it's told in the form of interviews and stuff like that. Where were you when the fucking uprising happened? So, hopefully he does it that way, you know, looking back on it. But that we may finally get to see that movie because
this guy,
Terminator 3 should have been that Cold Rise of the Machine.
Yeah. This guy is Sam Worthington Fillion.
Well, it's what
the
casting
looks
of
like,
this.
Aaron Eckhart.
Well, the casting of this is that's the guy from True Blood. He's all famous because he's on True Blood.
Vampires.
And,
lots of vampire connections.
It's kind of like stunt
way.
Casting in that way. But the other thing I didn't know this till the credits when I read it. But the woman, the mom, is Madchen Amick, who was the hot young thing on Twin Peaks. And I was like I've spent this whole scene going, who is that? I know who that is. And she was on Twin Peaks when she was like a young ingenue. And cute as a bug. And I was like, ooh, Madchen Amick's still around. That's awesome.
This scene, again, in the writing, it's like there's this weird balance where they're trying to do a Firefly thing with the parents, but then the girl is like a California girl from the Valley, 2011.
So... Yeah, this. If you're not gonna make me like Paul Bettany, you have to at least make me like Lucy.
Yeah.
Otherwise, I won't care at all about any of that, and I don't like her that much.
Lucy, by the way, obvious Dracula connect reference there.
On the other hand, now
the other problem
like,
is that Lucy disappears for. How long?
They do talk about that in the commentary too, where the scene where she and Carl Urban have a conversation.
I love you.
That was
amazing.
That was bumped up earlier. That used to be much later in the script, but they said we need to remember that Lucy exists and show that she wasn't killed because you don't know that until you see that scene.
Holy God, that was bumped up earlier. That comes in like an hour and a half from now.
That's like the end of the second act.
Yeah, it actually was pushed in earlier than it was originally intended to be. So, but I like the movie because it killed the parents off.
Yeah.
You know, just, boom, bang, slam, dead.
That was a cool transition.
Blood, you know, the whole thing.
Is this a Zoic movie? I know they do a lot of Screen Gems movies. I'm going to look that up.
I don't know.
I don't think it's Zoic.
I was actually very surprised because I knew that this was a $60 million movie because it was Screen Gems' most expensive movie to date.
Fuck.
And by the way, Blade Runner.
Yeah. A little bit, you think?
But I was really impressed by the level of, you know, effects work that's going on in this movie. It's really actually quite impressive.
Yeah, and it's Blade Runner. It's the Equilibrium City with the Blade Runner grime.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And that whole sort of, you know, bizarre. It's funny. It's like it's such a trope that even I, the militant atheist, am kind of sick of the oh god another you know
oppressive
church. Oppressive thing. Yeah. It's like you know it's
the 1984 church world.
Yeah,
yeah,
it's like even I'm like that's you know that's such
so,
a
yeah,
straw
tell,
man.
Tell
I really
me
did
not Blade Runner with that,
no,
with that
I,
umbrella. In the
I really
background.
Did. Yeah. I really was like, why aren't the umbrellas lit up?
Yeah,
just,
yeah,
go,
they
just go all
totally,
the way.
Just do it. Just go for it.
Yeah, we know what you're doing. Just do it.
Just why not?
A lot of companies, but Zoic's one of them.
Okay, there you go.
Zoic's in there. And then this is taken from a comic.
Yeah.
And once again, one of those things that works in a comic that just so doesn't work is the fucking tattoos on their faces. Yeah. It's like, seriously, that's part of this? It's like, I'm a secret ninja, as you can tell by this fucking thing on my face.
At last, we'll reveal ourselves to the vampires. At last, we'll have our revenge.
And this thing they've got, against the church is to go against God. Fine.
Yeah, okay.
Makes sense.
But they say it about 1,000 times before they finally pay it off with him. And by the way, that's another thing where it's like too much spoon feeding of the audience. We'll come to it when he's in the bar and he makes his decision. But it's, you know, there's the to go against the church is to go against God. And someone says it to him too many times. And he says, then I go against God. The dialogue passes that line. I would have suggested he say, so be it. Just that, a much simpler way of saying nothing.
And
yeah,
shoot a look.
He breaks his rosary.
The super slow mo Zack Snyder shot of the beads hitting the ground.
But it's like either say something simple like so be it, or say nothing and just show him break the rosary. And it's like, no, I get his decision. Yeah.
I think I know what his choice is.
Yeah.
The other aspect is, God as a force doesn't come up.
That doesn't pay off in any way.
For that mantra to be repeated so often, to go against the church is to go against God, so he goes against the church, and the church is obviously a force and a character within the film, but God as a character.
I don't think he needs to be, though.
But the corollary to that is, well, of course, that's because he's exposing the church as just lies, and it's just a way of keeping people down. But that doesn't pay off either.
Right.
They don't pay that
off.
There's
leaving that set up for the sequel, because right at the end is when he exposes the church as lies.
He's going to go against the church.
The thing is, it's like, this is an alternate world where there are vampires and have been all along. So the church fights the vampires. I'm like, you know, like you said, even as the militant atheist, it's like, this is the fictional world where vampires exist. God could too. Fine.
Yeah,
I perfectly accept that. But
and Hogwarts is real too. Why
not?
Yeah,
exactly.
That's fine. Just tell me the story.
And but the thing is with vampire lore, you kind of accept that because the vampires have an aversion to holy water. They have an aversion to crosses, et cetera, et cetera. So you're like, okay, so I guess that works. That's real in some sense. But you never get a sense of that either, because it's just that they have ninja stars that they hold, you know, they keep them in crosses and stuff like that. But I'm like, I don't think it's a cross. I think it's the ninja star part that's actually doing
yeah,
it.
Yeah, well,
you
it's
know?
It's in terms of that translation of the genre crossing over, you don't know exactly what pieces from which genre are still valid that are coming over. Whether it's like the holy water and the actual cross, the religiosity of it is carrying over to this new supernatural genre or not.
I have to say that of all the elements of this movie, maybe he's done fine.
Don't like
fine
this
work.
Guy at all.
This guy, not once
no?
did I buy
no, no,
him
no.
him being this guy, character. Not once. This is
he looks like he's 15. It's
I
like,
agree.
What are you doing?
And he's just one of those things where it's like, he's acting. I just see him acting.
Yeah,
I just watch him acting. I'm a gun-toting slinger from the frontier.
I'm 22 and grizzled.
Yeah. I'm the rootinous-tootinous sheriff.
It's like I just.
Woody's Roundup.
I would have really liked to have seen someone else in that role.
Yeah, I mean, they could have made it work if they played up more the fact that he's young.
Yeah.
He's the only guy who can be the sheriff. They gave him the badge.
They're
kind of
trying to do
doing.
That because he gets better later. Yeah. But it's just. I just don't buy that he lives in this universe.
Yeah,
you know, it's just and it's a hard thing, you know. But
he is a pretty boy in a crab sack world.
This
right?
is a great.
By the way, he's also kind of a reference because he played a vampire in Twilight. So I guess that's kind of stunt cast. So
I hate everybody. Anyway, this is a great trope. This is exactly the kind of thing I love about TV tropes. There are no therapists in most fiction. There are no official systems in place to protect those who are psychologically vulnerable. Nobody's ever concerned that the kid who watched their parents die might be considering suicide, homicide, fighting crime without due process. And there are no psychological profiling in military organizations to recognize problems.
Well, here's exactly...
Great trope.
Here's exactly the problem with... we're looking at here, and I know from just reading the trivia, I didn't listen to the commentary, but he was... the director looked at the... You know, this organization is kind of the Jedi Knights. And it's like, you look at this, they have exactly the same problem as the Jedi Council did, which is they're just like, nuh-uh.
Yeah.
It's
no
like,
way.
They're totally insular. And
well,
like,
also,
we've always been this way.
But
it's always been
Cornelius Fudge.
But at least, but or, yeah, the Ministry of Magic. But at least Harry Potter and this movie.
Ministry of Magic, I understood where they're coming from.
At least Harry Potter and the priest world understand that makes them the villains. Whereas the Star Wars series does not seem to understand.
I don't get that you're the bad guy.
That the Jedi were the bad guys now, the way you portrayed them.
I do, one of my issues with this that I think could have been stronger is it's like, okay, so literally the movie is so leaning on, so supported by tropes that the trope literally is, they're the church, they're lying. It is what? Why would they cover up the vampire menace? Is the idea that
wouldn't that give them more power to say we need to be in charge to protect?
There was
you.
A vampire menace, and they had the priests go deal with the vampire menace, and then the vampire menace went away, and the priests all had to go underground, and now the vampire menace is back, and a priest is telling you bullshit. Says the Space Council.
I can give you the answer that they would give you, but it's a bullshit answer.
Go ahead.
The answer is, the public trusts us to have protection over them.
Yeah.
If we don't, then they'll stop trusting us.
But
and then
I mean,
society look allowed.
Which again is like, yes, you could say that, but it's like, how'd you get away with it the first time?
Right.
I'd just sell it the first
and,
time.
But I'm also a little surprised, you know, in our
trope, corrupt church.
Well, corrupt church or
so trope that I'm tired of it. I'm
or
like something else.
Corrupt government. I mean, if you're looking at it from a liberal standpoint, how easy is it to look at it from like, just look at what the Bush administration did. They're out there somewhere. You need us to protect you. Why wouldn't the church do that?
They would embrace that.
Yeah, they would embrace the fact that the vampire menace is still out there. They wouldn't be trying to deny
almost,
it.
Kind of, if you want to get a little conspiratorial about the Bush series, like, okay, but make sure you don't actually end the threat.
Right.
Because we need the threat.
There you go.
Yeah.
There you go.
Don't actually destroy them.
Yeah, there's the conflict.
Go out there and kick some ass, but don't kick all of it.
Yeah.
Because we need some of it.
Leave
for tomorrow.
Some ass unkicked.
Yes.
By the way, it was that scene.
So there's a great
little encounter scene right there. That was the scene that the you know her and the train.
Oh, that one. Okay.
That was the scene that was bumped up earlier.
Though. I thought you meant the Pirates of the Caribbean.
I said the dinner scene, but I'd forgotten it was that scene.
Okay.
He's gonna have some brake fluid. Brake fluid.
Yeah, because if you do it that way, then you get a nice Act 2, Act 3, you know, pivot where the church has been helping him and has been...
Yeah, you weren't supposed to kill the queen, you motherfucker.
Not this much. We're not supposed to be this successful.
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
You killed the queen? Fuck. Well, now there's going to be no vampires.
You killed all the lieutenants, and now we only have the queen, so you can't kill the
and
queen.
And one actually, lieutenant.
Yeah, so
one
that...
The, go ahead.
So the church comes against him to try and stop him from succeeding.
So now in the third act, he has to kill the queen and the church, or it defeats both the queen and the church.
Or one of the things that I actually...
The queen in this example, by the way, is Carl Urban.
Yeah, no. that's just a rumor. The thing that of a movie that I just rewatched...
Is it really?
Yeah, no, it's not. Not the, although it is now. I'm just on the
Mike's ears perked up.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Anyway, a movie that I just rewatched recently was... Okay, yes, Van Helsing. Because I'm fascinated by that movie and just like the way you can't look away from a car accident. And one day I'm going to crack the code on that movie. But one of the things about that movie that actually is fun and interesting and good is they go to Transylvania and he has his like, you know, steam powered machine gun. And he actually manages to down a vampire queen as she's destroying a city.
Yeah.
And after this long knockdown, drag out fight. And the villagers go, "You dick." You know, at the end. And he's like, "What?" And they're like, "Now they're going to be pissed." Normally, they take like one or two of us a month, tops.
Uh-huh.
Now they're just going to be, now they're
now
mad.
Now they're going to annihilate
now
us.
Now they're fucking mad, you douchebag.
We just went past the...
Here's the thing, though. I didn't even know it was a rosary. I didn't cue into rosary. I thought, oh, they're going to slip and fall on the beads. That's what he's doing here.
Yeah, he's going to throw the... That's the priest's secret weapon.
He's throwing out his bat beads.
Yeah, exactly. Anyway, so I did the... You know, that I thought that was fun. I thought that was okay, nice reversal, cool reversal. So if you could kind of play that off in this too, is like you weren't actually supposed to kill. It's like the Vietnam thing. That's why the priests are pissed. You wouldn't let us fucking win.
Yeah.
You know,
you fought, kept stopping us.
You fought it to a draw and then you made us go underground and stop doing it entirely.
I wasn't, and it's almost set up that way because that was something I found interesting in the prologue that I'm like, you don't see that very often, where it's like there's this fight between these two forces, you know, the forces of humanity and the vampires, and it's like the humanity kind of wins, and it's like the remaining vampires went on reservations. I'm like, what?
Yeah. that's cool.
Yeah, there was actually, you know, some restraint demonstrated on the part of ostensibly the good guys,
exactly.
But who aren't really the good guys. Yeah. And they love these shots of these motorcycles.
Oh, yeah. Do they?
How many times in the movie do we cut to just
these are the moments that I felt I was like, this is like ultraviolet right here. Here's Lord of the Rings a little bit.
Yeah. I have a question.
they're doing the hell out of these shots, though.
Oh, yeah. These shots are great.
And
yeah.
These are practical motorcycles. These bikes are real, which is pretty fascinating.
Question.
Yeah.
How many magic beans?
I think.
Well, here's what makes me wonder.
It's a Wonderland. I guess that's fair.
I think there's two magic beans. There's the existence of the vampires, and there's
the
possibly,
church. Topia.
No, because
okay,
no, that's just science fiction.
That's a turn of a screw away. The idea that there's the vampires, but there's also some kind of unrelated power. In the priests, because they talk about the priests have these abilities.
So the vampires plus the force.
The reason I was asking.
Can I just say, I would counter that by saying I don't think the vampires are a magic bean, because let me redefine the magic bean again. It's a thing that makes no sense that can't be justified. These vampires are not supernatural.
That's true.
They're beasts that just do things. That's crazy, but it's not like...
It's different. They don't exist in our world, but they are
But they're
animals.
A thing,
yeah,
and they work this way, and somehow or other they can infect you, but they're not undead. They don't return from the dead. They're just these beasts that we don't like that drink blood.
That's fair.
And they're labeled vampires.
And they can infect you, but you don't become a vampire, generally.
Yeah, the magic bean is that...
The one guy did turn into a
vampire. No, the magic bean is that you can throw a rock and a guy can step on it, and whole sort of ninja power thing
that doesn't actually
exist and can't exist in our world that is in many movies about humans can't do that shit. That isn't possible. That defies the laws of physics. That's a magic bean. You just go, but he's a priest and they do that. Magic bean. That would be magic bean. Fair enough.
Well, here's why I asked. What universe does this take place in?
What do you mean?
Is it future us?
No. It's a future sidestep of us. It's an alternate
world.
With
vampires.
Because the vampires have clearly existed since before our time. They've existed since, you know, at least the Industrial Revolution. We show us fighting basically World War II against the vampires.
Yeah. Well, a combination of medieval / Industrial Revolution.
It's an alternate history future of us. You sidestep us into an alternate history where vampires have existed all along, and then you extrapolate our future from there. Yes.
Yeah, it's a galaxy far, far away.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you know, they're human enough that we can go, oh, okay, I understand what they're saying, and I know where their faces are.
Few movies have the guts to do. The only movie I can think of that really was like, no, it's just you're just gonna have to find a way to relate to these is actually Dark Crystal.
Yeah, exactly.
That's the only one where they
Where's
were like,
that?
"There's no people.
Yeah,
there's no people. You're just gonna have to learn to live with that."
There's just really creepy, almost people.
Yeah.
That are scary to look at. So yeah, there's Brad Dourif kind of. Yeah, you know, and again, this is where it's you know. It gets the Firefly-iest.
Yeah.
Certainly, because that's a character who literally you would think, you know, probably about episode 19 that never existed, a Firefly, that guy probably would have showed up.
Yeah, the snake oil salesman. Yeah. Yes.
Which is great. I mean, again, it's one of the few times it's like, yeah, he'd be there.
Yeah.
This is the world. That guy would be there selling vampire cure.
Well, they do have the alien fetus two-headed cow thing.
Yeah.
And someone's pitching that.
That's true. But that's just a freak show thing. He's not actually pitching like cures for X, Y, or Z.
But there are related ideas. The idea that, you know, that's an example of really thinking through the world and going, well, what do people do for entertainment? And you know,
what did they do back then? That plus space equals
plus technology
Firefly.
plus there are instead of, you know, this frontier instead of Indians has
Reavers
has lumpy vampires. Beasts that drink your blood. You know, and what's that life? What's life like? Yeah.
I mean, I do like that. You do feel moments of that. I mean, I called out the you know, the Lord of the Rings, the I can't even remember what they're called. Argonath. That's what they're called in Lord of the Rings.
Oh, the statues.
The statues. Yeah. But but at the same time, it serves the same purpose as it does in Lord of the Rings. No one sits back and explains what those are. Yeah. It's just that they're there. They've been there for a long time.
Just,
so there is a history to this world.
It shows the
that
history
you can
of the
kind
world.
Of appreciate.
Yeah. And there's a scene later where they have the ruined city, which is like, you know, this was the world, but this is obviously long gone.
Right. That's the only bit that's recognizable as those are skyscrapers.
Yeah,
that's our world.
It makes it think like you should see the Transamerica building or something.
Exactly.
But I don't believe you do. I don't think it's any specific city.
If we wiped out the audio and just used what's here and changed the words they're saying, what kind of changes would you try making?
Well, that's what I was saying. I mean, give it a dialogue pass. You're almost making the same movie, but just have more subtlety in what they're saying. They're not saying exactly what they're thinking or about to do at any given time. And do more of a Firefly thing where there's more personality, you know? Mm-hmm. Like we said, the Brad Dourif character, the snake oil salesman, he's got a personality to him. You know, it's a cliched personality. The first thing he does when he comes in front of the you know, the vampire, you know, boss level, there's the queen that we get a reference to, but she doesn't really come into this film. It's really Carl Urban. But he comes in, he's like, so there's the matter of, you know, compensation, blah. And that's a cliche to be like, I'm all about the money or whatever, but it's still, they're having a conversation on two different levels, whereas most of this movie, everyone's having a conversation on exactly one level.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time, which is exactly what they're saying. And weirdly, a lot of the time, it's a repetitive level. Like, there's a bit coming up here just after the Ruined City that we were just talking about, where he and the sheriff...
See, Magic Bean.
He
can't do that. That's not possible.
Yeah. He and the sheriff have a conversation, and he ends it by saying, you know, if Lucy's infected, I'll kill her, which is, you know, dark and interesting, blah, blah, blah.
The priest says that.
The priest says that. 20 minutes later, when they meet the you know, the girl priest who comes, he asks her, you know, if Lucy's infected, will he kill her? And I'm like, he literally said to you in so many words that.
You didn't like the answer Dad gave? You're asking Mom?
Yeah, exactly.
Mom, Dad said that he'd kill her.
Yeah.
No, honey, he would never do that.
Yeah,
it's like we already got that information. Yeah. Thank you very much. I'm with you because that scene, for example, and this whole setup, I was like, well, that's actually, I mean, that as a story, not as how it's executed, but as a story concept, that's pretty cool. It's like Paul Bettany was madly in love with this woman. They had a child, but then he was recruited. He was forced to become a priest. He had to abandon his family. His brother stepped in to raise the child and form the family. They all know that the woman never got over Paul Bettany, and he's never gotten over the fact that he lost his daughter. You know, it's like, okay, that's some hardcore shit. You know, that's some good character stuff.
Yeah.
That's great. If only you hadn't just kind of told me.
Just kind of
so
said
flat
it.
Out.
Yeah, just kind of said, here's what happened, and then I felt like this, and then this happened.
Yeah.
And I mean,
that was pretty sad. I was very sad.
Yeah. And there's the whole scene where he says, you love her, don't you? And the sheriff just like nods, like, yeah. He doesn't say it, but there's a whole, yeah, I love her. It's like, you know, there's just an extra dialogue pass where he goes, what the fuck do you think? I'm riding out into the wasteland. I'm about to go against an army of vampires. No. I think, you know, I'm just interested in her body.
I just want to bone her a couple
times.
That's why I'm doing
this.
The
good rule of thumb is the deeper, the more affecting the statement is, the more buried it should be.
The less you're going to say it outright.
The less you should say anything like that head on and just fucking say it.
Yeah.
So, yeah, if you're going to say, yes, I love her, bury that sentiment under five lines of bullshit dialogue.
Have him get defensive about it. Like I said, you know, just say yes. So.
I think the single, for me, this is related, stay with me on this, the single greatest moment for me on Moby Dick, 2010 Moby Dick, the one where I felt most like, yes, I just did what a director is supposed to do.
This feels like concept art, by the way. It feels like they literally put concept art
in
there for
the
wide
sketch
shot
of the city.
Of the map painting.
And there'll be a city that'll look kind of like this.
Mos Eisley Spaceballs.
Yeah. We'll never find a more wretched hype.
Anyway, sorry, go ahead.
Anyway, there's a scene in Moby Dick, it's toward the climax when, you know, Ahab is gone full crazy, and Renee's character is no longer participating, and she's, you know, there's a scene where she's outside the door of the control room, and he's inside, and they're having this back and forth emotional, and she's like, don't you understand? And the last two lines of dialogue in the script were, she says, you have to stop. And he looks at her and he goes, I can't. And we ran the scene a couple times. And we get to that last exchange, that last two lines. And I kind of go, ooh. And so we ran it a couple times. I think we may have shot it a couple times. And then I went around to the back of the set. And I just, hey, guys, those last two lines, how about we drop them? And they both went, thank you. Yeah. You know, it's like, that was like, I felt like, okay, I actually literally isolated a real issue with that scene, which was those last two lines. And it's like, regardless, I'm not putting up my Moby up for an Oscar, but wow, the scene got so much better when those two lines of, let me tell you how I'm feeling, let me tell you exactly what I think of that, turned into a look between the two of them. It's like, oh, it got so much better. Oh my God!
By the way,
and the fact that they were so grateful was what really like they were trying. They were giving it their all, but I gave them permission to go. You know what? Fuck that. Let's not do it.
Regarding Priest, I was watching it and I'm like, wow, that's really open minded. That this sheriff of basically, you know, their equivalent of the Midwest is like, hey, you know, to each his own. I wouldn't want to be a vampire familiar, but blah, blah, blah. So I like, I'm watching this and it's this crapsack world, but I'm like, I bet they have gay marriage.
Yeah, why the fuck not? Yeah, whatever. Anything goes.
No, they aren't harming me by being vampire slaves. Let them.
Yeah.
Which, well, it's probably a spectrum sort of a thing. It's like, because you have vampires and some kind of form of vampire bestiality. Gay marriage is probably
they're like, oh yeah, the butt fucking. Welcome to
True Blood. That is exactly what True Blood is. Is rednecks hate vampires, but now they're okay with gay marriage because hey, that's nothing.
At least you're not fucking a vampire.
Yeah, exactly. It's like that's what True Blood is. It's a whole gay analogy. I mean, two episodes I've seen of that thing. So a woman is wearing a T-shirt that says "No special rights for the dead." You know, that's fuck those people. They're dead. I like this. You know, there is a glimpse in what you were just talking about, this whole idea of the familiars and why the fuck would someone do that. There is these glimpses that someone did actually kind of think of the ramifications of this world. Like, you know, well, it's a pretty gritty life no matter what. Some people, that might be preferable. You know, that might be something they'd seek out.
There's a bunch of really good tropes right here, real quick. Hold on. One of them I love because it's a reference to a Nine Inch Nails song. It's called Happiness and Slavery. But specifically the character, the Renfield, which is from Dracula, which is a sycophantic, worshipful, perfectly willing slave of usually the big bad. Generally, he's of only marginal usefulness due to his incompetence and or obsessions. That's great.
Yeah.
This
is a whole room full of them here. Right. And the Renfield, the dude who literally is the Renfield that they're going to find, hell of a performance. that guy goes full Goldblum and Tucci all at once. This guy. It's like, I think the director remarks on that in the commentary. It's like literally like, okay, come in, get on the costume, put you in makeup, and now, how do I say
freak
this?
Out.
Just be just as nutty as you can go. And, this guy, I like this guy. This guy's like, he's scary. Don't want to be in a room with that fella.
This isn't a point, but I'd like to float a thought. This is the two things that Joss Whedon had the most success with in one movie. Vampires and Old West future. Just a thought. One movie doesn't work at all. Or at least, you know.
Well, because Whedon can do characters. Whedon can create a human being and cast it properly.
And he likes to set up tropes and then subvert them in a lot of ways, which I think
is really not fun. This guy likes to set up tropes and do them.
Yeah. And that's fine, too. I mean, I'm okay with a by-the-numbers, thing. If you do it, if you get it right, it's like, yeah, okay, it's fun. I enjoyed myself. You know, it's like this is not perfect, and there are things that I quibble about in this movie, but it's like, well, for what you set out to do, I think you got it. You did it,
There's color and sound.
Yeah, it could have transcended by having some things changed and tweaked and adjusted and, not falling back quite so much on the, if it tripped up a few tropes more. Like, yeah, so, you thought we were going to do tropes straight down the line, but we're actually going to flip a few on their heads. That would have been, better.
What would happen if you did a movie like this and you played every trope but one completely straight and you only subverted one?
It depends on which one you subvert, really.
Yeah. I wonder, would the audience love you for it or would they hate you for it? If you spend 100 minutes in a movie doing, Planet Terror or whatever it is, just doing straight up that kind of movie. And at the end, I don't even know what trope what you would subvert specifically, but you really just fuck the audience's expectations. I have a feeling the audience would riot on you.
Well, The Mist.
It depends on how you do it, because if you just subvert a trope, and it's just like, right here we should zig, but we're going to zag.
Shyamalan.
Bleu.
Olé, Shyamalan.
But if it's the kind of thing where people can go back and go, no, the movie actually was leading to this point, quietly, off to the side. Yeah. It was leading to this point, and I just didn't see it because all these other tropes were providing misdirection.
Right.
Then they would think it was great. If it was literally like something like, I don't want to say Scott Pilgrim, but something in that sense where it's like the entire movie is building up to this point, and then we're going to take a sharp left turn.
Right.
End.
I'm not talking about that specifically,
Well, in the chat room, Joe says, with regards to Planet Terror, you talked about Planet Terror. Mm-hmm. In that version of Planet Terror, Tarantino gets to rape Cherry.
Gets to what?
He doesn't rape Cherry, though. He doesn't.
I'm sorry, that sentence didn't sound like English. Tarantino gets to rape Cherry? What does that mean?
In the movie Planet Terror, Tarantino shows up and tries to rape a character named Cherry.
Okay,
but
thank
can't,
you.
As
thank
per
you.
The, you know, trope.
And
that's,
oh, you're oh, saying that
in
is
the version
a
Planet
of a
Terror
trope.
That you're talking about, oh, he would get okay. to rape Cherry. And that's what that looks like, for
well,
instance.
That doesn't necessarily change the,
right, it doesn't,
the outcome.
And see, I think that would, okay, if we're using that as an example, I think I would personally love the shit out of that because the tension in those scenes is like, they're not actually going to do this. The tension in a scene like that is basically the audience member and the filmmaker playing a game of mental chicken with each other where it's the audience member's going, you're not really going to do it, are you? Mm-hmm. You're not really going to do it. And the filmmaker going, I might. Do you yeah. think well, I am going
that's
to?
That's a tough line to cross, though. I mean, I've only seen one movie that actually went there, and it is kind of like, was kind of the death of the movie. But the they play it a lot with death, though. It's weird how, you know, rape, no, we don't go there. But death, they do all the time. He's not really dead.
He's not really dead. Yeah.
You know, it's like, no, he really was dead. You know, you didn't really kill the main character, did you? Yeah, we totally killed him. Yeah, we totally did.
That's actually, I like the way you put that. It's like the game of chicken, because that's exactly what we talked about. It doesn't really apply so much to this film, but it is a good point on what we've talked about with when there's the long drawn out shot, like in The Shining. There's the long shots where it's like, what's going to happen? Are you going to do it or not? Is this what's happening here? Yeah. You know, we don't get many of those in this movie. And
no, there's a good example of that in the Battlestar, the new TV show, where it's this long drawn out shot where you really think Ronald D. Moore might just blow up the title ship and kill off the main character. There's that moment where you go, I don't know. You might do this. I don't know.
Well, but the show did do that. They did go there other times.
Yeah, it did often
I didn't
enough.
Watch the, I still haven't seen the entire series, but I know there was one famous scene that I've seen and you know, where there were two major characters who were due to be killed. And were.
Yeah. And indeed they were.
And indeed they were. And I was kind of like, they're not going to. Holy shit. They went there.
Orlando Bloom's going to show up and throw a sword under the hanging.
Yeah. But no. Did not do that.
You know what I love about the colors in this movie, Dorkman, are the teal and the orange.
Cut your face. Go on.
It's a perfect example of, I know what happens when you put orange and blue on the screen at the same time.
Well, this is,
it's
well,
awesome.
Well, what they're doing is, you know, I would, someone on the chain, I don't want to put it on anyone's specific shoulders. It might have been the director, it might have been an executive, blah, blah, blah. But somewhere along the chain, someone went, this doesn't look like an expensive blockbuster. Give me that. Give me that so people know that we spent money on this and they want to go see it. Yep. And that's how we got this. So it may have been the director who I'm sure is pretty savvy about this. I mean, he's a buddy of Stu Mashwitz who is very familiar with that stuff and Design Magic Bullet and stuff like that. Hi, Stu. He listens to us as well.
high five, too.
Yeah. So he may have been aware of that. It may have been something that was out of his control and he didn't want to do it for all we know. Who knows?
It may have been his idea. We don't know.
But there was color rape.
But it's there because that's what you do when you're making a blockbuster movie, and this movie wanted to sell itself as a blockbuster movie.
Do
I think
you know
that's
what
how it happened.
The budget is on this?
$60 million.
By the way, we haven't mentioned, but this was a 3D movie as well, which you can see very much in the way it's composed.
It was a converted 3D movie, but people were very impressed with the conversion.
But it was kind of shot with 3D in mind because you can just sort of see. I got the impression from the director's commentary that it was always a 3D movie because at least he had that in mind.
Yeah.
Maybe they weren't shooting it 3D and they just were going to do a conversion.
I was looking for visual effects artists earlier and like half the list of people who did post on this movie were doing 3D.
They knew it was going to be 3D, but they shot it and then converted it, I think.
God damn it, people.
But the composing, I mean, you can see the composing for 3D, which is good because if you really compose with, you know, depth in mind, it's going to be a good shot anyway.
It looks pretty good.
It's a really
interesting
shot.
That's what you should do regardless.
Yeah, it's kind
of
what you should always do. Exactly. It's funny because I think there's some really nice, you know, beautiful shots going on in this.
Because that's what brings movies to life anyway in a composition is when you get a sense of depth.
Brings movies to life.
Yeah. Like GE.
It's just the way you said it. You had this weird twinkle in your eye that put the little da, 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 kind of,
when you bring a movie to life.
It was a Disney moment. But no, it's true.
It's just the way you
look. Anyway.
It brings a movie to life.
Yeah.
The very act of photographing something is taking a three-dimensional representation of something and compressing it into two dimensions. So every photographic technique is about...
God, that tracking sucks. Yeah. No, it's not bad. It sucks to have to do that.
Yeah. Yes. No, I was going to say, what are you talking about? It's well done, but yes, doing it sucks.
That
yes.
job, I was going to say that. I meant that shot. Yeah. Oh, that sucks.
Having to do it is
every
good.
Aspect of photography is about putting that third dimension back into a
right.
three-dimensional.
Right. It's about giving the illusion of having three dimensions. Dimension, yeah. So, that would be great advice to give to any filmmaker. Pretend you're going to convert this into 3D. Give us plenty of depth to work with.
Also, give the writer that note.
Yeah.
Pretend this has to be 3D.
Yeah, pretend, make the characters three-dimensional if you can.
Yeah.
That'd be great.
At least.
But don't give that note to John Williams, because he will hit you with that music.
Yeah. Give me 3D in the music.
Dude, there's been, especially in
AI,
like,
I'm thinking. Or maybe
Resident
maybe
Evil.
Resident Evil.
I'm going Wally.
Resident Evil.
Wally, a little bit.
That's what I was going to say.
I was
E.T.
thinking
Resident Evil. Has some moments where it's like, damn, John, get out of my head.
Yeah.
It's like you reached out and hit me with your little stick. By which I mean the tappy thingy, not the
face.
Right.
Yeah, not the,
not the face, John.
That's
not
the deal.
Face.
That's what we agreed. Not the face.
And
no
then,
kissing on the mouth.
And there, I swear to God, I can't explain it better than this. There are moments in Giacchino's score for Star Trek where the sound has lens flares. I swear to God. It's beautiful.
That's
it's
not easy.
Dude, first of all, he's on Twitter, Giacchino. And second of all...
Hi, Zarban. No, this is the commentary for Priest.
He's talking about like the movies he's worked on. It's like, what movie haven't you composed in the last 2 years?
Giacchino
like,
is the shit. I love him so much.
No, he is great. I'm not complaining. I'm just saying people are like, oh yeah, check out this movie that I scored coming out this weekend. It's like, what didn't you score coming out yeah. in the next
Don't you have
months?
A movie coming out every weekend?
Yeah. And also how? How do you do it that fast?
Maybe he does his Zimmerman thing.
Shut up!
Hans Zimmer thing. That's
what, you know who I'm impressed with is Chris Ridenour, who scores every Asylum movie. And he's good. He's actually good. I think his scores are among the, of all the elements of an average Asylum movie, the score is like so much better at a higher level than almost any other element of an Asylum movie.
Wow, really, Lalide? There's a trope. Okay. The Lady Priest has a mistreatment-induced betrayal of the church.
That's a trope.
I'm gonna look for examples. Hold on.
Yeah. Okay. Tell me other examples of that. What's the phrase? Miss what?
Mistreatment-induced betrayal of the church.
Mistreatment. Okay. Okay. All right. I'm grasping it now. Okay.
Working on it.
So it's the church. Yeah. Okay. So like
The church touches you in your naughty place.
Yeah.
And
then
that
you,
gives you,
you
the dark demons.
Right.
And eventually
and then you turn against them.
Yes. Okay. Yeah.
In V for Vendetta. After V offers Creedy the chance to betray Adam Sutler, Sutler almost comically goes out of his way to blame Creedy for everything, ensuring his upcoming betrayal. Uh-huh. Okay, I'm not following. In The Rocketeer, Neville Sinclair responds to the revelation that he's a Nazi agent by sneering at the idea that the gangsters working for him would care. They do. What? Let me read the description of this trope.
Wait, what?
I'm not following how this is. All right. The Big Bad.
See, I was going to say like Agnes of God or some shit like that.
The Big Bad.
Jane Fonda,
that's what I was thinking too. The Big Bad has a loyal minion who has been feeling somewhat less loyal recently. Oh.
Did you actually click to a different page?
That's it.
Okay. So
church means just the authority,
no,
I think.
The church part is not necessarily part of the trope. The trope is mistreatment-induced betrayal. So it's when the villain... is an asshole.
It's like
to
the guy with the shield in 300, the hunchback in 300, that kind of thing.
Yeah.
I think she's prettier than him.
True,
and less yellow all over.
Yeah,
that's racist, dude.
They finished the amazing prosthetic, and then they painted over it with yellow paint. It was like this really cool detail. There's pictures of it prior to.
Like
what are we talking about?
You know the troll guy in 300?
Oh, we're talking about. Okay.
That
sure.
guy? Remember that?
We both thought you were talking about the Asian priest.
To Maggie O.
And you're like,
about painting Maggie
yellow.
O yellow.
It's like, excuse me, what?
Well, that too.
It's a nice little moment. The little hand. Ooh. Don't pull the little hand.
Oh, Mr. Arnold.
Yeah. It's like, it's a doll. That's not better.
That's almost not. Well, could have been worse. But Jesus.
Here we go. Here comes our alien moment.
Fun thing about this set, interestingly enough, is the set is it's only a little teeny piece of set, and it's got a mirror at the end that reflects back. So every time you see them go down that hallway, that's all the hallway there was that the shot has to cut. And there's even a great clip in the making of where the guy with the doing the EPK is walking down the hallway and bangs right into the mirror. He's like he's looking through the camera lens. He's like, and then clang. He just bounces right off himself. He thought he was going down another hall, and there was none.
Oh, been there. I just hate walking around on back lots. That just happens all the fucking time. You guys know what I mean? Where you're just walking down the back lot, and then one of the walls is actually a matte painting, and you're like, oh my God, there it was.
I get that problem with sliding doors all the time. So now here we're about to see...
Trey's like cat videos on YouTube.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
It's open!
So here we're about to see the thing where it's like, you know, again, I, not having been raised on the whole Chop Saki Hong Kong Fu wirework business, you know, when they do the, you know, they do this like rock thing.
Even this is too much. Even the rock thing is too much for me.
That's
when I watch it and I... Exactly. I go, I see what you're doing. I'm not sure how it works. Yeah. That actually works. If you bring Tartakovsky in to do that sequence, fine. Samurai Jack, animated. Why not? But maybe it's the way it's shot.
You get into Tarantino territory if you do that.
I guess
if you change up the medium in the middle of the story.
It's one of the few times that this movie actually crosses that line. I mean, everything else you can kind of go, well, they're just sort of hyper... You know, hyper-tuned humans.
That one's
just
like, oh, it's magic.
That's like, but that can't happen. That's not real. That isn't possible in our universe. Then now there's magic. You know, and you know the idea of like, well, unless those throwing stars weigh 500 pounds, you're not going to get them to pierce anything. You know, it's like these are just issues that just like, well, that's just, you know, ignoring the world we live in, which I object to in any movie, unless you're going to say, but it's magic. A wizard did it. Okay, you know, that's
the best shot, by the way, with it, with the
beautiful, where he plows through and crashes and you know stumbles. That tip it.
It's like, you know what happens when you throw the ninja star at me? I go like this.
Yeah, that stings. That went almost a quarter of an inch in. Jesus.
And then
I'm going to have a mark.
I did actually have that feeling at exactly that scene where he throws the ninja stars at what's called the Hive Guardian here. He throws the ninja stars at the Hive Guardian, and it barely flinches, and it comes at him like, you've done this before. Surely you knew that wasn't going to work.
I'm a freaking Hive Guardian,
yeah,
dude.
He has this look on his face like, I wasn't expecting that to happen.
Yeah. See, now he's going to focus his chi or some shit.
Don't do it.
She's
going to do it this time, too. She did it last time we watched this. Yeah. And she's doing it again.
It's like,
Chloe just walked in for this moment.
As if we're going to buy it now. He's like, no, we didn't buy it the first time, movie. Why are you making us watching it a second time?
Yeah. And Chloe sighs.
Chloe
just sighs.
Come here.
There you go. No, it's going to be okay, Chloe.
It's
just a movie. It can't hurt you.
Attack of the Clones right there.
It's going to be okay ever again.
Doesn't this look awesome?
It looks awesome. That's the point.
That was going for an anime moment. No specific anime, just the kind of thing where, like, the samurais pass each other and they freeze, and then one of them explodes in blood and dies. That's that moment right there.
That's kind of what that's about.
Chloe, you want to sit in on this one?
And then it's like the movie here is like you were saying about dialogue. It's like he actually has to do the callback about point A. And what really bugs me about that is they're doing a callback to when he gave him the lecture about how you have to anticipate where they're going. The target wasn't moving. Anyone could shoot that vampire.
Not only that, but
way to not even understand the trope you're doing. Yeah,
he gave him a lesson about how to lead the target, which anyone who knows how to shoot anything knows.
Oh, I
see.
So the vampires are faster. So I should lead them more. Thank you, priest. You have opened up a whole new world for me.
What I love is the moment where he's like, oh, they're vampires, and shit, I'm stuck. And he shoots a hole in the ceiling, and light comes in, so the vampires can't get him. Okay. And then priest's guy says, you'd make a good priest. How about this?
Really?
How about suck my dick?
If
that's all you need to know to be a priest?
I'm a priest?
That. Really?
It's like that Robert Rodriguez thing. If you think you just are a priest. Just say you're a priest if that's all you have to be a priest.
So it's just a one step from, hey, sunlight, I should get sunlight, to being able to jump off of pebbles and leap in the air? Really?
Can
is it that simple? Is it just like a one-to-one? That's fantastic.
If I'd make a good priest, then I'm no longer impressed with you. that's what it is.
I thought you were all special and shit. Yeah. But
exactly. It's like that self-loathing thing.
I
don't like
moment.
You if you like me.
Yeah. I just had a common sense moment there. I had a moment of clarity. That's all
I
was.
I will say with this scene, she talks about, you know, I have bad dreams. I wake up, blah, 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 blah. And she says, the good nights.
I dream about other things. Bless you for not spelling that out.
I swear. I thought she gives that look over her shoulder. I thought she was going to say, I dream about you.
I dream of having sex with you.
And I was like, no, please don't. And they didn't. And I was like, okay, plus one.
Yeah. So it's not like you don't know how to do this. You have one life left,
Donkey Kong movie.
Yeah. It's not like you don't understand how this works. That's good.
I like how they basically given all these priests, especially her, PTSD. Yeah. And it's not something that they really focus on. It's just like... That's one of the interesting ideas. Yeah, what she's describing is essentially PTSD, and it's just... That's what she has, and it's fucked her up.
I think they do talk about it. I mean, I didn't listen to the actual commentary, but I read it in the trivia. It's basically like they came back from Vietnam,
right?
And no one gives a shit about them. It's like, dude, what?
That's good. That's fantastic.
Chloe's just watching this and cringing. It's adorable. In the chat room, this is sort of unrelated, but to the you'd make a good priest thing. Zarban has an interesting factoid. The judge told Ted Bundy he would make a good lawyer.
So it was kind of a backhanded compliment.
I think so.
There. Yeah.
Anyway, are priests allowed to have relations? Are they allowed to love?
No.
Romance is forbidden.
Forbidden.
But in some ways, you could say we're encouraged to love.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Are they supposed to be Catholic? Is there any clue?
Is the Pope a Catholic?
Yeah. They have confession and they
rosaries.
They ain't
Protestant.
It's Catholic.
The Hail Mary.
Okay. Yeah, you're right.
It's Catholic-esque, certainly. You know, they've turned. They talk about how they turned the cross in like a corporate logo. It's like, yeah, that was really a breakthrough thing you just did there. No, it's not really. It's not at all a breakthrough. It's kind of old and tired, but okay. Now the movie like here is like here's where the movie's like literally it turns into like the Good Reavers episode of Firefly that never actually got to happen.
Uh-huh.
You know, because it's like. This is an awesome fucking sequence of this town being massacred by these, you know, crazy things. And again, it's exactly what Joss Whedon was going for. He just didn't have the budget with his Reavers. He probably would have if he'd had the budget. Rather than like guys with their lips all stretched out, he probably would have, you know, done something more exciting. But, you know, this is a great sequence.
Yeah,
it's a shame that it doesn't involve any main characters.
Yeah.
But that's just how it goes.
The sequence, in this sequence, all of the shots with Carl Urban in silhouette are awesome.
And
those are all the shots where I'm like, start over, and that's your basis for the movie.
And examples of the trope, While Rome Burns.
Yeah, literally, yeah.
Where the bad guy is just doing his sort of calm thing in the face of all this mass destruction.
Yeah.
And cats and dogs living together.
And the director talks about how Urban was like, really? You want me to do that? I'm not going to look like an idiot.
Well, at that point, if I'm Carl Urban, I'm going...
Carl Urban,
every other thing.
Carl Urban's done some whacked out shit his whole career. I mean, he's
Riddick. He would brook no party in the back.
Yeah. He's Riddick. He was in Doom, and this movie also the creatures owe a lot to Doom. The faceless, just a mouth that's totally from Doom, among other things.
And Roseanne Barr.
You know, but he's been Lord of the Rings. I mean, Lord of the Rings.
That's a risk.
You had to have been going. We could all look like fucking goofballs.
Yeah. Yeah.
We could all look like idiots doing this. But you have to just commit and go and do it.
And have Peter Jackson.
Anyway, so the director talks about how, you know, Urban was like, you know, I'm not sure about this. But then when they looked at it on the monitor afterwards and he saw what the shot really was, he was like, okay, I get it. All right, now I see what we're doing. So here's this really, this thing. It's like, here's some characters and some sympathetic, you know, okay, we get them and, you know, and then they die.
They have,
it
which
almost
is good.
Literally looks like the same actors as the prologue.
They have motorcycles with onboard BIOS.
And big old gramophones.
Yeah.
And no iPod to plug into the gramophone.
As Timothy Busfield would say, okay.
Okay.
Well, it's like, I mean, you know, Firefly, that was the complaint about Firefly. It's like, why do they even have horses? Why don't they have hovercraft? Because they're on the frontier.
Yeah.
Priests in the city have the hovercraft with the BIOS. Now, these people are on the frontier.
Dude, those creatures... totally work, and that's the secret. If your creature looks like shit, make it wet and reflective.
Yeah, these by the way, this go Carl, as long as he's not talking, I buy him.
It's actually when he gets more physical that I buy him less.
Yeah, this actually is a western backlot town that they just industrified.
I think this is the same place. It's on Netflix. Really,
it's been a thousand movies.
There's a movie
it is.
Called Oblivion, which is a sci-fi western pre Firefly. Totally weird. I only saw like the first 20 minutes so far. It's got George Takei in it, though.
Is it totally ripping off Priest?
I don't know.
Strangely,
what
yes.
But yes, we'll say that. But it looks like the same backlot, so I would bet it's the same town.
Oh, cool.
I love that shot. I was like, that's amazing. These shots here.
Yeah.
This is great. Wonderful trope. Lalide, good one. High five. Schizotech.
Yeah, nice.
The setting may seem at first to be the Middle Ages, the colonial period, or some fantasy counterpart culture. But when you look closer, you find polyester, robots, or some other high-tech toys in between the horse-drawn wagons and waddle and daub buildings. There's generally no rhyme or reason for which technologies are anachronistically present, besides the rule of cool.
Yeah. An example that I thought was fun for that example, not necessarily that the whole thing was successful, but the Dark Tower, Wolves of the Kala, where it's like a frontier, but there's a robot.
Right.
There's a sentient robot in this otherwise frontier universe.
Well, the Dark Tower all along is like
it's
all
this
the,
weird
all the
amalgam
Beam
of westerns
like that,
western and sci-fi.
Penny Arcade had a strip they were doing for a while. They did three different stories that they were going to spin off, and I don't know if they ever went anywhere with it. But it was like a robots in a film noir and like a really like Maltese Falcon universe.
No, I saw that one. I don't remember what it was called, but
didn't you
I
just
actually...
direct a web thing that was the exact same pitch you just gave?
Did I?
A robot in a film noir thing.
And a ninja and a gay guy.
I emailed them. I was like, can I make a short out of this? They never got back to me, but I was like,
the
this
robot
is awesome.
Ninja gay guys? Guy?
No.
Guys?
No.
Oh,
no.
Penny Arcade.
The Penny Arcade guys. Thing.
Right. I was going to say, mm-hmm. We know him.
We
Why
know
did you email those guys?
Guy.
We know that guy.
That is Inspector Space Time.
Dude, that was so fucking weird.
Yeah.
That was so fucking weird. For those of you that don't know or care, you won't, whatever. But
for those that don't care.
So I'm watching Community, right? And they're doing a thing where it's like, oh, one of the characters just got into this sci-fi show from Britain that's been on the air for 60 years. Oh, my God. They're doing a Doctor Who thing. That's great. I'm right there with them. That's funny. They have their own little fake Doctor Who, cutesy. And he's pulling it up on the laptop and he watches it. And the little police box lands in a new time. And I'm like, yep. And then out comes the fake Doctor Who. My friend Travis. My friend Travis is fake Doctor Who on Community. Wasn't prepared for that.
He actually told me about it before.
And it's called Inspector Space Time?
Inspector Space Time.
Nice.
Very nice.
It's Abed's favorite doctor is our friend Travis. What?
And we'll actually drop a little piece of inside. They're going to do more.
Yeah.
He's already shot more.
This is where I go, you live on a spaceship, dear. You work.
I know.
In
I know,
the movie industry.
Well, no, it's just that
this is not weird. This will keep happening.
I know it does. I just love it when it does. But I'm sitting at work watching Hulu, and out of the corner of my eye, I'm like, "Oh, cute! They're doing Doctor Who. That's great. I love Doctor Who." What? It was like that Family Guy thing. What?
Yeah. 300, by the way.
300.
What's happening on the screen?
It feels like it should be something else too.
300.
It feels like
a million other things.
But you know, hey, it works. But you're Spartacus.
Also Jesus.
You know, yeah.
Also
Jesus.
Also Jesus. Okay, fine.
Also the Bible.
The fucking
the
thing.
Original trope collection.
No. I mean, let's not go.
In the chat, Zarban says,
after all.
Trey, in the chat, Zarban says, Teague is from Indiana. He just works in space.
Okay, that's true.
Hey, that looks like the shit they pulled out of the World Trade Center.
Oh.
It's an industrial cross.
Yep. What a shock that a random infinite,
we found in
infinite,
a big grid
a random
structure.
Infinite pile of vertical things
there
that there should
one
be a cross shape.
On
I know, I'm going to hell. That's how it is.
But,
wait
but,
a second, whoa.
But that is an important, not the 9/11 thing, but going back
that
to...
That wasn't important at all.
Fuck the 9/11 thing.
To this commentary.
Yes.
But it was 10 years ago, come on.
But can we move on? It was grim, we get it, let's move on.
But... Anyway,
bravo.
Go on. Send your emails.
downinfrontshow@gmail.com.
Yeah. What I was going to say is I suppose it's an interesting – it makes an interesting quiet point, a subtle point where, you know, they crucified these priests. So it's like clearly they don't have a problem with crosses. They made them some – some themselves.
Give me some crosses.
Yeah.
Well,
so
that's the whole thing.
That's a good point.
That's one of the things, the trope that they deliberately set out to subvert is this whole idea. If he reads from the Bible, it's not the Bible. He's
right.
Just quoting. The Bible doesn't – you know, there's no spirituality in this story. These
right.
aren't vampires like, you know, Dracula. These are creatures that are called vampires. They live in the real world and they have a real physiology. You know, prayers don't concern them. They're not afraid of crosses. It's just that the crosses are weapons. It's kind of like the idea of the church has been subverted into this warrior cast.
Before we all
that still keeps
and
the same
I mean,
trappings,
and that's why you really don't have the sense that God is a character or a force in the
no,
story.
No,
not because
at all.
That,
and that's why I say that the vampires are not a magic being because they're very down to earth, real creatures. They're not vampires. They're just called.
By
them.
The way, this is the moment where I was like, "Hey, Pirates of the Caribbean."
Yeah. Before
right.
we talk about how much this moment is bashing its head on pirates, just in case you wanted to know
and,
the backstory,
and another trope that the director freely admits that if you miss it, you're really. Very sad, but
it even looks the same. My God. Yeah. Anyway, the chat room is just as fucked up as we are. Don't worry about our sick fucking fans.
Seriously, it's going to happen in a second. If you don't scream the name of the movie, then I'm going to slap you all. But go ahead.
Joe says, oh, 9/11 was the best 11. And Zarben says, Challenger was just getting funny when Columbia screwed that up.
Yeah, I know. Another 10 years. Added another 10 years on that one. Another 10 years in county jail.
Ooh, God, and a good trope. The Church versus Vampires is black and gray morality.
Yeah.
Tasty.
Oh, you made me so sad. Not one of you said Raiders just there.
Oh, with a knife. Okay, yeah.
That's intentional. The director cops to that in the commentary that's from Raiders.
Unfortunately, it just looks exactly like Pirates.
It's overshadowed by Pirates because this whole scene
is like
plays out
shot for shot.
Yeah.
She's even dressed the same way.
Yeah.
Well, I guess so is Marion.
That's right. So, for those of us who don't give a fuck about those pirate movies, I went right to Raiders instead.
The first one was good, goddammit.
I never even... Yeah, that was all right. It's like, but now, finally...
I know the second and third ones are total messes, but... Just as
the first one was entertaining. I was there. I was on the record as saying it. But it's like, I don't think of Pirates of the Caribbean. It's not ingrained in me. Anyway, here's Carl Urban.
He's acting
really hard.
Do you see how hard I'm acting?
I like the guy. I don't want you to have the impression that I don't like Carl Urban, because I do. I really do. I think he's good.
I just don't think he's... I think he's... Well, he's the kind of actor who's like, okay, you want me to be in your movie? I'll take it. You know, and it's like, what have I got to work with? Well, that's a you problem. I'm just going to do whatever I can with it.
I just think that he doesn't quite have enough to be forceful and mean and villainous and do the accent at the same time. I wish they would just let him speak in his normal voice.
Can we just agree to call Carl Urban Snarl Acton?
I think that too denigrates him too much. Like I said, I think he's really good. I just think it's just a little too... He's still working too hard on the accent.
Some people like a salad dry, and some people like it with acting sauce on it.
Some people like it. No.
Joe says Trey sounds like a constipated Shatner.
Yes!
Which is funny because his name is Shatner.
Yeah.
Hmm.
And he's actually would be Shatless in that case.
So he would just be Ner.
Shatner, I never even met her. Well, then.
Shatner, I never met her. Reinhold, I never messed her. Everest joke, never mind.
Yeah, I know. It's pretty
well.
It's pretty above ground. You wouldn't have heard of it.
Wow, good.
Thank you.
Beautiful.
Thank
done.
You. Good night. Anyway, Priest.
Oh yeah, we have to.
So it's a little bit much with the.
She is a little more yellow than him. I'm just pointing this out.
Even color correction can't change that.
I think they did it. Intentionally, man.
I find myself honestly pretty distracted by the crosses on their faces, especially because it's off to the side.
If there was ever a time to not be faithful to the source material,
yeah,
let's not have the fucking tattoos on the faces.
At least not down the nose. I think that's what makes
it
too extreme.
I think that's what
it is. Put
it
on the
forehead. Because we're trained, we're hardwired to, when we scan people's faces, we're always looking at their eyes.
Yeah.
And so anything that gets in the way of us looking into another person's eyes is problematic. That's why whenever you have the vast majority of the time, you have an alien with full-on latex, full-face makeup, it's still human eyes in there if it's a character you're supposed to actually have a conversation with or relate to in any kind of way. So it's like, yeah, I think the tattoo would have sufficed. It would have been okay if it didn't, like, screw, didn't get right in the way of looking in their eyes.
The sun just found a hole in the landscape, and it's shining right at me. And it occurs to me.
This is for real, not a metaphor. That's just
through the window.
It's not an Elton John lyric.
And then I realized you were just speaking literally.
That wearing dirty glasses in the sun is like existing in JJ Star Trek.
Yeah.
Like it's just nothing but these cool anamorphic flares across my eyes.
Yeah.
But you are beautifully lit right now.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's sexy.
Yeah. That's quite something.
Okay.
Stupid sun.
Now that was a scene that scene there where she did have to kind of
solar baby.
She did have to kind of spell it out about okay, here's how I feel. But you know, goddamn her, she was acting it though. I mean, you know, it's a good cast. It's a good cast. It's like ooh. So like you said, I think just give them other things to say,
and
this movie would have been so much more successful.
This is an interesting point that Zarben makes. In this age of Google, what kind of moron names a movie Priest?
No. Well,
do you want to be the number one return?
The moron who bought the rights to the comic book Priest.
Yeah. You should call it
because you know
Priest.
There's a huge market because it's a comic book.
You know, it's not like if you named your movie The.
Yeah.
I totally want to do that.
I want to pull that up on IMDb right now. Oh my God, help me.
Yeah, that'd be great. Well, that's why the Sci-Fi Channel is called the Sci-Fi Channel now.
So, oh, it's the Syfy.
The Syfy channel.
That's why it's called that.
So. That makes sense, too.
Yeah, that's why they did it. Now, actually, one of the things they pointed out in the special features is his gun is both a revolver and an automatic. No. It's got a chamber. It's got a rotating cylinder, but it's also got a clip. And that's why it's got two barrels, because it's both in one. And they say that. The director goes, does that make any fucking sense? No, but it's awesome. It's like, okay, if you can just admit that was your sensibility, I'm much more on board with what your movie now. I get it now. I get it. It's like, okay, yeah, that makes no freaking sense. I mean, there it is. Look, there's a clip that goes in bottom, but there's also a chamber. And they're both practical. It works. That's a working double gun.
But, good thing we already killed off
why
randomly.
Why would you ever build something like that?
Exactly. Yeah. But hey, you know.
For the next.
Because it's cool.
For the next child of Bruce Lee.
Ooh.
Yeah, so the thing about the cross and the cross
too
idea.
Soon.
The cross idea also is like.
No, well, it's not.
They've already established that the cross is merely a symbol. It's not like if you have a cross on your face, the vampires can't bite you. Right. It has no actual power. So why, you know, it's like, okay, I'll be taken away from my family and the woman I love and become like a space ninja who has to kill vampires. But seriously, a tattoo on my fucking face, really? Is that necessary? Come on.
Train top battle is a trope.
Oh, boy.
Oh, of course.
Matrix Reloaded, truck battle. That's what I was thinking.
Last Crusade.
Yeah.
Oh, that was cool.
Every Western ever made.
Yeah.
At the, I saw Williams.
Back to the Future.
I saw John Williams at the Hollywood Bowl, and he mostly just played the music. But at one point, he did a thing. It was really cool. He said, "I've gotten the rights."
I got on top of a train and started punching people.
It was
he
awesome.
George Lucas.
No, it was so amazing. Awesome.
It was cool, and he did a backflip. It was CG. He got the musicless version of the first 10 minutes of Last Crusade. So all the stuff in the caves and belongs in the museum, belongs to Coronado. You know, he's dead. Grandchildren on the top of the train stuff, the whole thing, and he played the whole thing without music. And it's just awful and fucking interminable and just, God, I don't care. And the sound effect when goes into the snake thing where it's like, is so loud and awful and out of place and everything about it sucks. And then he played the music live and it's the most fucking awesome scene you've ever seen in your life. It was so cool to see that happen. With regards to Last Crusade train fight thing.
TLDR, music is awesome.
Music, good. I'm was interested in the making of how they shot the sequence because it actually it's kind of a good combination between current digital and old school, because what it is, it's a semi pulling three real train cars. So a lot of the stuff they're doing is up against a real background of a real train car side.
To the side of the bikes is what you're saying, or just in general?
I'm saying that the train consists of a semi-truck pulling three train cars across the desert. There's okay. No train, there's no track.
Right.
But the three of the cars are real and really there. So like there when they're riding alongside, right. That's real. That's all a real thing. And then they just added the rest of the train and they added the locomotive out the front.
Did the bike really explode, Uncle Trey?
Probably not. Probably not so much.
Aliens?
And I thought that was really cool because that way they, you know, that's they're able to get a lot of the stuff practically.
And killer
way.
Clowns.
And Killer Clowns.
Yeah, dude. Totally.
A little bit. And Van Helsing, for that matter.
Oh, yeah. Invasion of the Body Snatchers.
More than anything else, it reminds me of Van Helsing. But the train track is always entirely digital unless they're shooting next to a small little chunk of train that they built just for a shot. You know, when she's setting the charges, that's real train track. But
you know what's weird? Yeah. Surrogate's at least stuck to a genre. This is like... If they weren't making a every movie from the makers of that movie... It would be a jokeless version of that would just be this, where it's like every scene ever is in this movie. It doesn't seem to hold as tightly to sci-fi tropes as Surrogates does, which I guess is a positive quality. I'm having a weird sort of existential thing here.
what is this and yes, what am I?
Teague's about to have another ray of sunshine shine directly on him, I think.
Guys, the light is so bright.
We're going to go sucker punch. Oh, wait, this is good, maybe.
I'm just so enchanted by the movie at the end of it. I'm just like, there was cameras and widescreen and blue.
Yeah, see, here's the bit where I'm like, no, he's got a point. That's better than what you got.
Yeah, that's
actually.
Actually, yeah, what do I owe those fuckers, come to think of it? It's Guillermo del Toro talked about, you know, his own assessment of the problem with Hellboy 1 versus Hellboy 2. Was even he admitted in retrospect that in Hellboy 1, it wasn't really clear what the bad guys were trying to do. It's like, wait, what are you trying to do? You know, if the bad guys thing is, I'm going to bring about Armageddon. Okay, go on. Why? Yeah. What's going to do
for you at the end of that day?
The guy who wrote a fantasy series that's becoming a big thing. I haven't read yet, but I've had it recommended to me. Patrick Rothfuss. He wrote In the Name of the Wind, sequel, The Wise Man's Fear. Haven't read it. Heard good things. But anyway, his whole thing was in finding new motivations for the villains. And I bring it up just because I like the way he put it. He's like, I never understood the villains who wanted to destroy the world. Why would you do that? That's where you keep your stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Unless you want to go, well, he's just crazy insane, which is okay.
Which is The Dark Knight. Some people just want to watch the world burn, which is a perfectly valid, you know, motivation and trope to use. But make sure if that's what you're doing, that's what you're doing.
So here's where she's showing, you know, super ninja powers that aren't real. So this is the magic bean. And is the magic bean in most ninja movies ever made is, you know, there are things that humans just actually can't do. But, you know, we go, oh, but she's a superhero. So, okay, fine.
Right. Well, they tried to do, the walking on pebbles thing was trying to be like a crouching tiger wuxia type thing as well, you know. So.
And that's fine. Like I said, it's like, but that's the magic bean is because that's the thing that isn't part of our universe. You know, that's where you have to kind of go, but yeah, a wizard did that. You know, all this, like, flippy stuff.
Can we stop?
We're almost done.
We just have to wait for the train to actually get to the city.
Yeah.
But the issue...
A little bit of Batman Begins there, too.
A little Batman Begins, a little Road Warrior happening going on, and then, you know, a little Crouching Tiger, Hidden Dragon, Road Warrior action.
I really didn't like the sound design on this thing, just because it was so, like, in your ear.
You know who did it?
Huh?
You know who did it?
Who? Oh.
Ben Burtt?
No, I was just making that up. I have no idea.
I was like, he did this to us? He's usually so much better than
you're
that.
You're giving me the Ben Burtt look.
Yeah.
I know that look.
You know who else did sound design? Hitler.
You know who else liked sound in movies? Goebbels.
And Spielberg.
You thought I was going to say Hitler.
And here's a weirdly, like, almost Dawn of the Dead-ish moment where it's like, meat everywhere.
Which I like. It's like, okay, well, if you're going to do it, just then, okay, go all the way with it at least.
Like, can we get more of that then?
Yeah, she can actually like explode people with her, you know.
Oh, wow. That's deep.
What?
Did this rip off Surrogates or did Surrogates rip off this?
Like I said, the Surrogates is the Surrogates of the dystopian future iRobot-y bullshit movie.
Mm-hmm.
This is the Surrogates of the post-apocalyptic crap world.
Crap sack world
movie. It's all of those. Whereas Surrogates is all of the high-tech future movies.
I tell you what, Carl Urban knows how to wear that outfit.
Yeah.
He's got his arms out just right, like the gunslinger. Yeah, he's walking forward.
There is a man who knows his own silhouette.
Yeah.
Which is kind of important, you know.
If you're going to be that guy. And Body Snatchers a little bit, you know. Actors today, especially actors in movies like these, they have a whole sense of movement and kinesthology about it.
I didn't like that shot where he got punched in the face, by the way. He was making a very silly face before he got punched.
I once heard it described as someone who he knows how this is supposed to look.
Uh-huh.
You know, which is you know, these things are so ingrained now. It's like if you're going to be standing on top of a moving train with a, you know, Clint Eastwood outfit on,
there's
a way to stand. There's a way that we want you to do that.
In the chat, Zarban reminds me of a conversation we need to have on this commentary. How does this compare to Legion? As two bodies of work by the same guy.
Better.
Yeah. Better?
This is definitely
Agreed.
Better.
Agreed.
What improvements did he make over Legion?
I think one of the main things, and a lot of it in Legion may not have entirely been his fault because of limitations on budget and yada yada. This one actually makes sense. There's a through line that makes sense. There's still a problem in characters that you don't super care about them, but at least. Generally speaking, the motivation of each character actually makes sense. It could have been improved, but it's significantly better than Legion in that it's not like Legion where you're like, why did that scene even happen and what are we talking about and what's going on?
Right. Here,
you want all the pieces to be there and to work and interact with each other. And if they do, then the clock works. It's just, it's not a Rolex. It's just, it works. It's a dollar store clock.
It's not a good clock.
It's a Timex. It's that little cheap Timex your mom bought when you were 6 years old. At least in this movie, we know what they're doing.
Yeah.
We may not know why or care, but in Legion, we don't even know what the hell they're doing.
Like we talked about, they're trying to save the baby because of it. In this one, it's like, because of angels. And in this one, it's like, well, vampires are bad, although actually they've got a good case. But you know, the vampires are bad and we're trying to save humanity. Okay, that at least makes sense.
You can kind of shorthand that and get away with it. Yeah. Like, oh, all right, I guess. If you really think about it, it doesn't work, but okay.
Yeah, well, but part of it is like you said, it's easy to shorthand it because it's like, vampires are going to do something to humans. Oh, okay, that's not good.
I'm against that on principle.
Whereas, if you delve into the mythology and you go back and it's like, yeah, God and angels and something humans. It's like, I'm confused. Wait, who's the bad guy? What? Yeah.
How come Paul Bettany doesn't stop the train by punching it?
Why doesn't she stop her with her rope darts?
That's good. I thought he was going to get stabbed in the chest like Barbossa. I totally thought they were going to go full pirates.
I did too, yeah. By the way, I missed the opportunity to go last. What was it, last night? Or two nights ago?
We watched
Priest.
I'll vouch for you, though.
We're watching the scene where he's like, why do you care so much? And I'm like, I'm his father. Or I'm her father. And then on the screen, I'm her father. It's like, wow.
Because I am her father, yeah.
Motherfucker looked just like the thing. Yeah. That's just fun to say. I'm sorry.
So it's just like... Yeah, it's like
that train.
So it would have been so much better to not say that. You know, it's like
no, it would have been awesome if he was like, he's her mother.
Yeah.
Whoa,
she owes me money.
Are priests seahorses? That's awesome. Go on.
I'm her mother. Whoa, it's a whole other movie now. Well, I didn't see coming.
Why? Because I mean, the excuse, or at least the justification at the beginning before the reveal of that truth, is that Paul Bettany is her uncle.
Yeah.
Why is that? Why do you even need to go to the next step? Like, I love my niece and nephew, and if I were Paul Bettany in this situation, I would feel compelled
to save
them.
If you're a celibate
would you stop
priest,
a train by punching
they're it? Your only family.
Yeah.
You know?
I think it's just fine. I think it's like, it's like, he's the bad guy. You don't actually have to answer his conversational question. Okay, you know what? Fuck you. You're going to kill me and pin me to a wall with a steak knife, but I'm going to leave you hanging as to answer that question. Okay, how about that? I'm not going to tell you. Okay? How about that then? You're just going to have to die wondering. While I hang from a burning train by a steak knife. So there, pooey.
So what? You may win the day and you may kill me, but...
I'm still hanging out of a burning train by a steak knife.
Yeah. I still got that one night.
I get that one shot in, though. That hurt. That stung. You know it.
One character in this movie needed a Joss Whedon pass where it's just nothing but sarcasm. Just one character.
I bet if you replace Sheriff
Boy was supposed to be but he can't pull it off.
I bet if you replace Cam Gijande with Nathan Fillion, this movie would have worked so much better.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would be interested to see Nathan Fillion do it. And the other thing is, and the director did copy that, Michelle Yeoh, who isn't Michelle Yeoh, but she's the other one who's not Michelle Yeoh.
Something Q.
Maggie Q.
Maggie Q.
Which
is good.
I'm
not denigrating her at all. I think she's really good in this. Yes, it was intended. By the way, that stunt, Bettany did that. They remark on that at length. That he literally did do a flying leap, grab her with one hand, and catch the train with the other.
No way.
He actually did that. He was on a wire. He was on a wire, but of course the wire is only there if you don't make it. You know, so you don't fall. You know,
it didn't help him
10 feet to the ground. Yeah, he wasn't being supported by the wire. It was just a safety.
Very
he was
cool.
Like, if you look at the shot, it's a stunt girl. It's not the actress, but it's like he actually does the move you see him do. He did, and they like the director comments on it. He comments on it because Bettany goes, "I'm not an action guy. I'm a fucking British skinny actor. I don't know how I got into doing this stuff, but this is not my thing." Anyway,
he's
so
becoming that guy at least.
Yeah,
actually,
so that like Liam Neeson is sort of like somehow becoming that guy.
Yeah.
But I mean, the idea that that she was supposed to die. This is supposed to be a sacrifice that, you know, and the whole idea of her like surviving later was like a, you know, I think they kind of intimated it was kind of a studio. But no, but we like her. It's like again, sort of totally undercutting her entire character arc.
Right.
Just blowing that all. Just
but
screw
it can't
character
be an
arc.
Unhappy ending.
Yeah.
Interesting point from Zarban in the chat room. What would you say Paul Bettany's been pigeonholed as at this point?
Well, he's turned into, you know, the religious crusader action guy.
Atheist.
At this point. Huh?
Atheist.
Is he?
Apparently.
Awesome.
There's irony
I just think
for
that's
you.
Funny.
For him.
It's like, God, the guy who can't stop self-flagellating.
Yeah. And Liam Neeson is a terrorist.
Yeah.
That's what's weird.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
So take that money, man.
somebody had a tweet that was something to the effect of, right now... Somewhere in Hollywood.
I like him better now, though. We'll say that.
There's a script right now floating around in Hollywood called "Untitled Liam Neeson Revenge Project."
Yeah, and under that, if you peel off that label, it's an untitled Harrison Ford Revenge Project.
Yeah.
It's been around for about 10 years.
When they were casting Scrubs, they had described Dr. Cox as a John C. McGinley type role. He ended up playing Dr. Cox.
Perfect. How appropriate. So, yeah, train blew up, Carl Urban.
The whole desert's on fire. Yay, it's almost dark.
Yeah, here. You can see out to the horizon, Carl Urban's nowhere to be found. Somehow, if they ever make a sequel, which I don't think we're going to see, I guess he would have survived somehow.
Yeah, he was caught in the fire, but we don't see a body.
As the line I always trot out.
Well, he got in his TIE fighter and he flew away.
Yeah, the line I always trot out of when a movie pulls this kind of bullshit out of a hat is, "Phew, that was close." Okay, you have to be dead. The fact that you're not dead is bullshit.
Oh, well, his hat. I mean, he's dead.
If I lost the Markish.
I was talking about her. I mean, they did show her jumping off, but again, that wasn't the point originally.
Right.
Was, you know, that she was going to kamikaze right into it, but, And now we have the coda where the movie kind of thinks it needs to do this when it doesn't actually know why it should do it.
Yeah. I don't understand.
Maybe God just got sick of the bullshit.
Yeah.
Remember that? That happened. Yeah. That was a real thing.
Somebody thought that meant something.
Maybe God just got sick of the bullshit. Yeah. Yeah, that's a thing.
You think that would have happened quite early on, really, though, if that was going to happen at all.
In fact, according to the book, he has gotten sick of this bullshit.
That's happened quite a few times, actually.
Yeah.
The Etch-a-Sketch end of the world.
So this whole framing story of the church is all like, it literally is only the trope. It doesn't even bother to, like, really explain what does this mean, though? What are we supposed to get from this? It's like, the church is hiding it.
Oh, man. I feel.
Go on.
You're so right. As I watch this, I'm like, this is Equilibrium 100%. That's what we're looking
at. It's totally Equilibrium. It's in my head because I saw Equilibrium just recently and got it. But this whole idea about, you're out of order. The whole system, the Coke machine is out of order too, by the way. It's like, what is the purpose of this? It's like, the church does, is it because they don't want to believe it? Is it because, but they did before.
I think the great kind of dark way to do it is the church has been defying him this, like we talked about, the church has been defying him this whole time. He finally comes in and throws the vampire head on the ground, and without a beat, the priest immediately flips his script and starts talking about the vampire menace and stuff. You know, we've always been at war with East Asia. Just pulls a complete 1984.
That actually would have been great if he, like, because it's like, there's the evidence right there. It's like,
he drops the fucking head.
Thank you.
Told you.
Because I do that look like, just like, okay, play along with me on this.
Yeah.
Yes, thank you for completing the mission, the secret mission that we totally sent you on.
And
just
play
there.
Totally, like, this is what I've been saying all along.
Exactly.
People.
And watch the
entire. You have been listening.
And watch the entire audience go, he has been warning us. The church will protect.
Faith was security, right?
We couldn't say anything until we were sure Bin Laden was dead. Yeah. But now we can tell you that all along our intention was to do this.
Anyway.
Priest. If not have the church against them, then make it a little clearer about the way society is against them, and then show that it's like, oh, but the church is doing that on purpose for their own reasons, you know? But
you know how you can watch bad, or not watch, sorry. You know how you can eat bad pizza, but it's like, it's fucking pizza, I don't care.
I can watch bad pizza as well. Look at it go.
Right. And watch a bad pizza.
And then you're eating and it's fine. And then you have one piece of pizza too many, right? It's like, well, this was fine, but now not fine.
Well, now I feel kind of gross.
Now I hate the whole pizza.
Now not fine. Exactly. That's what happened when I watched Priest again a day after I watched it the first time.
Pizza.
Yeah.
It's like, it was fine, and now it's just like, not bad. Not bad. It's like having
pizza.
A hair on your tongue somewhere, but you can't get it off with your teeth. Stop it, priest. Stop it. Anyway,
priest. Okay,
that's priest for me. B.
Yeah.
R-I-A-N.
I think I actually would agree with you. I don't think watching this in quick succession was a good idea, because this was found this very
told
tedious.
You need Tums.
Too much pizza.
Yeah, this is too much pizza. I found this terribly, terribly tedious to watch through a
this
second
was,
time.
This was much. Quicker.
It's only like 92
time,
minutes long.
It's 87 minutes.
Yeah, it's a very quick movie.
I was ready to have the joke. I was like, I blinked. What'd I miss? Oh, all of it?
The movie.
Yeah.
Mike. Yeah. Fucking awesome, right?
There hasn't been a lot of time in between. Like, there are some movies, because I only watched it, like, the other day as well. There are some movies that you watch, like, you haven't seen them in months or a few years, and you're like, oh, you know, I've had time to reevaluate this. I'm watching it with fresh eyes, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, I got the same opinion now as I did at the beginning. It's closer that I mean, it's a fairly straightforward movie to the point that it's formulaic. It just needed a pass to make the characters into real people and make them entertaining to watch, because as it is, it's just going through the motions to the point where you can stop paying attention for minutes at a time and not lose anything. So it's close, It's just not quite there. And but, you know, it's such a great leap forward from Legion that maybe the guy's next thing will be awesome. So I guess we'll see.
What if Priest was a movie, you wouldn't punch it. You would just...
If Priest
put
was
a kick me sign on it.
If Priest was a movie, you wouldn't punch it. It'd just be like, you know, you walk by it in the hall, you're like, hey. What's...
yeah.
Trey.
Yeah. And you'd like, you know, do a little like shadow box, like, hey. Yeah.
Come at me,
bro, right? Yeah.
It'd be the Rob Schneider at the copier of movies. It's like,
yeah.
Hey.
Hey.
Priesty. Doing the priest thing.
Killing the vampire. Yeah. You're that guy killing the vampire.
But you have to do that because otherwise he'll start talking. You'll never get out of there. You gotta
jump in first.
Buddy, keep going. Just keep walking.
You
gotta
make the two lines of small talk and always keep moving.
That's right. Draw first blood and then run. That's how that works.
Trey, explain yourself.
It's a weird thing, and I still haven't quite cracked the code yet. But, you know, like I said, I bought this movie with
assistant
zero.
Assistant to Miss Q.
Isn't that nice? Everyone gets an assistant. Every man an assistant.
We make fun of Mick G, and we let this happen?
I bought this movie at the, you know, the Ralph's checkout line. I took it home. I watched it. I immediately watched it again with the director's commentary because I was like, how did this happen? I want to know, like, is this like McG? Is this like a McG thing where it's like, is this a Terminator X where
you just don't know any better?
It's like, do you realize? And it was like, there was a, I sort of discerned a, you know, walking that kind of fine line. It's like, yeah, it's this. Yeah. We made this. What did you think this would be? You know, it's like, yeah. Motherfucker, we did this on purpose. Yeah, that's from fucking, you know.
It's like, fuck you, Priest. And it's like, fuck me, fuck you.
Yeah, fuck you. I'll, you know, it's like, it, and, you know, I, any movie
I
that.
Fucked
like,
you just now. You didn't even know it.
Can be doing the effects, like always. You know, I, for a movie that does all the other movies, it does them really well.
Yeah, it doesn't fine.
It
you
fucking
can,
does them.
You can tell that it paid attention to those other movies. I'll
Blair
say that
Clark,
much.
Yay, Blair, go Blair. Chris Pizes, yeah, these are people I know. Renee Binkowski, Binky. Woohoo. That was her nickname, Renee Binkowski, Binky. She looked just like that. Renee Binkowski looks just like the lead from Sucker Punch. Yeah.
Oh, boy.
Not kidding.
Binky. I like it. Binky. Anyway.
I find the movie kind of fascinating and kind of a, it's like I feel like the naturalist who, like, this. How does this organism survive in the wild? It can't possibly be
You want
alive.
To study its habits.
Yeah, I do. I want to know the evolution of this movie. Like I said, I found it, and again, I probably give it the most pass because the post-apocalyptic wasteland I'm disappointed because by now I thought I'd be living in one, and I don't know where the fuck is keeping it because I've been waiting for it for 30 years. It really is overdue.
I've been trying to bring this shit down for years.
It was supposed to happen by itself, for fuck's sake, and it's still, I'm still hanging.
I'm still not getting my fucking back-end payment for Fight Club. That's all me, man.
I was told
the 90s were going to bring it.
Those are my life rights.
By now, I was supposed to be riding the Nitro truck across the wasteland and eating people, and it hasn't happened yet. So all I have is movies about it, and... So I just love that. I love that genre. I'm always fascinated by what people do with that genre, and so it gets a bonus from me there that probably gets it over some hurdles that it wouldn't have otherwise. It's just, like I said, it's a movie to study one way or another. It's like it's a movie to go, huh?
Poke, you know, poke.
Look what they did.
Let's draw some blood and see what happens.
Let's dissect it and see what's inside.
And on that contemplative note, this has been Down in Front. You can always find more episodes at downinfront.net. Subscribe to us on iTunes. Get a brand new episode every single week. Twitter.com/downinfront. Facebook Down in Front Show. Email us at downinfrontshow@gmail.com. Involve yourself in the forum at downinfront.net/forum. We're a big community of people. Everyone's awesome. We talk on the internet and cuss a lot. It's great. We also announce every week when, where, what, why, and how the live episode things are going to be happening, so you can be part of the chat room and help us out, like troping. Thank you very much, Lilide, for all of that. TVtropes.org for anything that ever happened in a movie twice. Matt Fedevedo show notes and chapter breaks in iTunes. Holden Hill Designs maintain the website. I'm tripping on it, damn it. And until next time, my name is T. Christie.
Brian Fedevedo.
Mike Scott.
Trey Stokes.
And this has been Down in Front.
Good night.
Thank you very much for listening. Good night, good night.
All right.
Beep, 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 beep.
How was that? Should we go
beep,
again?
Beep, 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 beep,
no, Carl, that was good.
Good, Carl. You sounded...
I thought this movie sucked.
You just got here. You just saw the credits.
Yeah, and they sucked.
Best credits ever.